Welcome to Emotional Sobriety.
A subject we return to a lot in our discussion of emotional sobriety is this core tenet of showing up for others without excluding or erasing ourselves, holding on to ourselves without excluding others. And, you know, in our relationships, we try to be of service to others. There's this tension between, do I give loved ones advice or do I give them guidance? If we could talk about this, in an emotional sobriety context, it might open up some pathways. So what do you guys think about this?
Maybe let's frame it this way too, Patrick, when you say it this way about being of service, I even think of the greater issue is being of value. And service is one, obviously, element of that. So I think it's a very important discussion because I think it's a basic need to all of us to feel like that we're of value to the people that we care about and that we love and that we're committed to and that we want to make a difference in their life. We want to have a positive impact, in their life. And I think that is a good discussion for that.
Well, what I want to say at the outset of this is just kind of my response to how you introduced it too, Patrick, is not erase ourselves, but also not overemphasize ourselves. We want to be of service to others. We want to be of value to others. I love that terminology, Alan, the value to others. But the other piece is one of the things you emphasized with your stuff, your book, Alan, is we never let go of ourselves. And so there's a dual process here because part of how I'm doing that has to do with taking care of my own personal integrity, my own personal respect. It's important for me to be respectful of that other person, but it's also really part of what Alan calls holding on to myself, that basically I want to be sure I'm doing this in a way that feels congruent with who I am.
Can we kick things off by talking about providing a negative example, and maybe you can bring something in from, experiences you've had of when you weren't doing that versus when you started doing something different and it all changed and it became something that was more emotionally sober.
One of the most important things I've learned about any of this stuff is part of the respect of self and others in doing this with emotional sobriety is what a teacher of mine used to refer to as knocking on the door. It's like, you don't just walk in the door and show up in somebody's living room. You knock on the door and until they say, come in. So one of the things that my teacher Jackie used to say is never proceed without a contract. And one of the things it did for me and it was really important. It's important in life, but important in therapy in particular, or important personal growth relationships, because it's a safe assumption that when we're talking to somebody, they're asking for our input. They're asking for our guidance or our advice. Like, I do have some thoughts on this. Would you be open to hearing them? Not falling into this deal where we're accidentally asking rhetorical questions, because when I say, hey, Alan, do you mind if I tell you what I think about so-and-so? I'm getting ready to tell you what I think. And he knows that. So he doesn't even know that he's been asked a question. He doesn't answer the question. So one of the things I've learned to do as a therapist and as a people helper is to slow down and go like, no, wait a minute. I'm really asking you, does this feel like something that you're, because And I was aside from that, I want to say, because one of the things I've learned from my wife and as we were talking about last time, Alan, I learned a lot from her because she's just more mature than I am, I guess. She taught me how to ask, what do you want, as you're talking to me about this, what do you want me to be listening for? So if she says, I want you just to listen to me. I just need you to hear me. Then what I've learned to do is I can ask that guy on my committee who's the advice giver just to have a seat. And that may be frustrating for me. That may be a little bit difficult for me because I love to tell people what I think. But it's like, but what I have learned over time is when somebody really needs to, and Alan, you tell me if this is true for you too. I mean, I think one of the things I've done over life and just in life relationships, but also in being a therapist, is being better at perceiving when that's what is needed is listening more than giving advice and stuff like that. But sometimes I don't always know exactly. Sometimes it's still good for me to ask that question, or even if I anticipate that they need me to offer them some guidance or some advice, to ask them it also helps people see their responsibility in the relationship. Because I'm being respectful to say, I know it's not up to me what you get from me. These are things I'm offering. Would you be open to it? See, to me, that's where you find the difference between guidance and advice. Basically, I'm not giving you unsolicited advice.
You really have a mind towards helping them out rather than just soapboxing your own opinion.
Another way, and I don't know if this is different or not, but as soon as you said that, and that's right. That's one question. The other question is very, very similar, but a little bit different. How do you want me to be listening? We were simultaneously practicing self-respect and respect of others. I don't think that's an easy thing. I think that's something that we have not been brought up to think about in terms of that.
Yeah, especially when there's some significant differences that and that difference is experienced as a threat in some way, then it's very difficult to remain or to maintain a very respectful attitude towards the other person. I say that personally, and I've seen that with the couples I work with. The bigger category here, once again, is just like we talked about in the beginning, value versus service, but it's also consent, right? What we're talking about is having a more consensual relationship and experience in our relationship. And it's something that we don't hear a lot of people talk about. How many times have you heard the concept of consent being discussed at the same time somebody talks about boundaries? I've never seen that included in a boundary discussion. And it is. It's really at the heart of healthy boundaries is to have, like you said, Tom, to knock on the door and if somebody wants to invite you in, to let them in. If not, then it becomes intrusive. Then what you have to offer is intrusive and creates a disconnection. See, that's big. Listen, often it's done, like you said, Tom, is out of good intentions. I want to help you. I feel your pain. I want to do something for you. But, what did I say? The road to hell is paved with good intention. We still got to be aware of. And see, this is, I think that I'd like to also bring in the concept of how to stay in close contact with someone we're in relationship with. Because that is also part of where we're going to learn how we're impacting somebody else by paying attention to how they're reacting to what we're saying. See, how many times do I see somebody in a couple session take a position and their partner gets defensive, and instead of addressing what just happened, they go back and they double down? Wait a minute. Well, this is it's like, but wait a minute. You just got a piece of information that they're having a hard time hearing what you said. Let's explore that before you move on, because that's the next issue that's up, is to deal with what's next. And see, this is, as Tom and I are trying to stitch emotion, all these different principles or concepts together, when we talk about having an honest and appropriate relationship to reality, it really resonates strongly in this area. Because if I can stay connected to you as you are without projecting onto you who I think I need you to be or want you to be or fantasize.
Even with good intentions. Now, see, I think one of the main things we're talking about here is people, and it's what I tell people all the time, and I don't want to abandon our gender, but I'm going to say men need to hear this in my experience more than women. Intention counts. It does count. It doesn't count for as much as we want it to. It's like we need, and what you're talking about is actually a part of the resolution of that, is that the idea is, if I come at this from, and you guys check me on this, because I'm just pulling this out of the air right now, but it's like if I come at this with the idea of overvaluing my intent, and my intention is good, is like what I'm not going to do is what you just said, is I'm not going to pause inside even my own experience to see how that other person is receiving this. There's going to be an assumption that I make that it's going to be received well or going to be received for what is intended, but it may not be because we all have these defenses going on inside of us. So we have to, and certainly as the therapist, but even in just our relationships, but as a therapist, we're responsible for slowing that down in our own process. If you want to make me feel really good about myself as a therapist, just be gut honest with me, you know? And that means if you think what I'm saying is just bullshit, then just tell me that. It's like you will not get shame from me. You will not be, you know, criticized for that. I will appreciate your honesty as long as you're being direct with me.
You're talking about now the person who's communicating is paying attention to not just your intention, but is it received, right?
And that's subjective. That's where we do not need to think that because I would receive it well, they will receive it well.
See, that's a big error that people make. They're gonna feel the same way I do. The other thing I was thinking about, where it does count. So if you're on the receiving end of that and you feel the person's missing you, it does help to say to them, look, I know your intention is good, that you're trying to reach out to help me, but it's not reaching me. You know, this is what really would matter for me right now. I'd like you to just listen for a while. See, that's where recognizing the intention can really help that person, because a lot of us are so, you know, dependent on being seen as helpful or of value, and our self-esteem starts to come in. And so if you criticize me, I get desperate. And see, this is one of the things that I saw this with in Dr. Kempler's work when I was training with him. A lot of men, as soon as they get criticized that they're not pleasing their partner, they actually go into a form of a panic attack. What it looks like is a little different than just heavy breathing and or rapid breathing and rapid heart rate. It goes more into usually either a withdrawal or an attack on the person. Look, you're always, nothing I do is good enough for you. You're always criticizing me. It doesn't mean, you know, good to talk to you. Geez, you're just like your mother or something like that, right? And he was always so good at jumping in there and saying, look, I can see that you're really having a hell of a time because your partner's not pleased with you. It might be more important, instead of attacking them, to tell them how important it is for you to please them and how desperate you become when you realize you're not. It would change the whole tenor of the interaction between
you. You're offering an alternative.
He gave him an alternative, and the other side works too.
What we do is, you and I use the same phrase I've noticed through the years. Try this on is what we'll say. It's like, not like this is what it is, but I got an idea, you know, and you and I also use the word experiment similarly. It's like, let's do an experiment. Let's try it this way. And to me, again, this goes back to what I'm saying about the emotional sobriety thing. It's like, it's self-respect and respect of others. It's like, first of all, that's where I'm not overestimating myself. I'm realizing I may really have a good idea here and I may be pretty certain of it, but I still can't predict the future. So I need to be humble enough to be able to go like, I think this will make a difference. Let's try it and see. And the other thing is, I think people feel more respected when we do it that way, rather than just tell them, if you do this, because that's what I've always wanted to do with my good intentions. If you do this, this, and this, then things will be better. It's like, maybe they will, but that's a really crappy way to communicate it. It's arrogant, whether I intend it to be or not.
What I need to keep an eye on for my emotional sobriety when trying to be of value to others and trying to offer advice or guidance, whatever it is containing that ego spillover of Will my direction be taken, you know, or am I being properly understood, or kind of attaching myself too firmly to this outcome, like what I expect for them to do and what kind of validation might I be seeking, you know, from whether they turn one way or the other.
Things can go really south if I'm with good intentions offering something to somebody and they give the honest communication. They let me know, maybe not in the best possible way, but they are letting me know that that's not very helpful to them. You know, at that point, I can get offended and I create another problem to lay over the top of what we're working on now. It's like you can't work on two agenda items at one time. I always tell people, you know, in our if we go to a business meeting, we do not put three agenda items out at the same time on the table. In our personal lives, it doesn't matter how good we are at business, somebody will say, I need to talk about A, B, and C. Well, I'm glad you said that because I need to talk about X, Y, and Z. You know, and it's like, okay, now what are we talking about? We got at least two conversations going, and you know, and only one person in each one. So anyway, I'm speaking for myself. It's important because we're talking about the emotional sobriety of the person offering the guidance to that. This point is I need to be really careful and be aware that I need to practice the principle of not taking it personally. So if I say, hey, Alan, could I give you some thoughts I have about this? And he goes, yeah. And I tell him some stuff. And I don't like, let's not even say he's just outright rejecting it, but I don't like his response. His response doesn't feel like he's really getting what I'm saying or he likes. It's like, if I take that personally, then I've added a whole nother level of potential conflict to this conversation. You know, if I'm practicing the emotional sobriety, we keep it cleaner. It's like I can even come back to that. If later I want to talk to Alan about that, you know, when we had that conversation earlier on the podcast, it's like I kind of got pissed off when okay, well, we'll talk about that then. But right now, stay focused on the agenda and say, okay, well, that's just his, and really remember, that's just his response. He's not doing anything to me, which is one of the main things we're always teaching people about emotional sobriety. You know, it's, what was the thing I wrote? I wrote this thing this morning. It's not anything original, but it's, I mean, not brand new, but I sent a copy to you guys, but you probably hadn't had time to get it. It's like, here it is. Says love without expectations. Adjust your expectations to reality rather than trying to bend reality to match your expectations or waste time being offended by reality, which is what we end up doing. It's like, I'm offended by your response. It's like, is your response genuine and, you know, and were you being honest? Yep. It's like, well, I don't need to be offended by it.
Offended by reality. That's it.
Yeah. Oh, God, we're so offended by it.
Oh, yeah, I'm always pissed off at that.
How dare reality?
How dare reality be what it is, right?
It's so absurd. When you say it out loud, you hear how ridiculous we are. But when you're in the middle of it, man, you cannot see that. And those Piaget experiments with those pre-operational children that are in pre-operational thought just show the power of what happens with our development and how it influences perception. Is we don't see reality when we're developmentally delayed. I mean, when we haven't grown up, when we're stuck at an earlier stage of development, we're unable to, and then we get offended with reality because it's not the way we think it's supposed to be.
We can only change ourselves and so other people, places and things, situations, we can't directly change. We don't have control over that stuff. It's like, I think a lot of people, my experience is a lot of people get that and hear that as bad news. But of course, the message of emotional sobriety to me is no, there's a lot we can do, but it all happens in here. We have to do it. We have to do everything from the inside out. If I want, I can influence both of you. We've known each other for a long time. There's no doubt we've influenced each other, the three of us. It's like, but we don't do it by pushing anything on the other person. You do it by being who you are. One of the things you do, how do you influence people? Well, what we're talking about is one of the ways we do that is you knock on the door and you be respectful if you have something to offer. Then because if I offer you something, Patrick, and you say, hey, well, I like that. I think I'll work on that. I haven't changed you. I've offered you something and you're taking charge of that. You know, and that's emotional sobriety. That's where we're taking. I'm letting go at this point. I'm no longer responsible for what I just said to you. Or I think about this with our books, Alan. Somebody, another author taught me a long time ago, said, once your book is out there, you know, whatever relationship anybody has with it is their relationship. It's no longer yours. It's like, you know, and so just, you know, you have your relationship with it, but other people are all going to, you know, and I don't know about you, but I, you know, when I hear somebody hear about like, oh, I love this book or this part of the book really helped me, I'm sometimes going like, well, what part of the book? You know, it's like.
So I have a sponsee who at one point he was going through some really rough stuff, and so he took it out on me, and he was texting me some really ugly things and some hurtful things. I didn't know how to help in that moment, but I had an instinct, and it's rooted, I think, at least partially in a lot of what we talk about here, to just, if I could just not take it personally, and if I could just not take that bait. And just like my mission then became not to offer like a counter argument, but to just kind of like take it with as much dignity as I could. Then who knows what might happen on the other side. And I feel like I had a sense of how that might have borne some like positive fruit recently, when this same sponsee ended up helping a guy who was just released from rehab and letting him crash on his couch, and just kind of like helping him to locate a sober living, and just, you know, just being showing up for this person. And all the while this guy was crashing on his couch and kind of he was driving him around to places, the guy was just a huge pain in his ass and was just like really aggravating him and, you know, making him regret immediately that he ever offered to be of service. And I was just thinking like, and I didn't, you know, I didn't tie it at all to like any of the experiences I'd had with him personally, but I was thinking like, this is what we do, is we need to not personalize, you know, when other people are going through stuff, or they're kind of like, you know, there are certain sicknesses they have, you know, or issues, or expressing themselves. You know what I mean? As hard as it is sometimes, you know, we could be doing so much heavy lifting by not personalizing it.
Is the wisdom is simply, I'm not going to add fuel to this fire, you know, and the fuel I would add would be, I'm going to have a problem while you're having a problem. It's like, if especially when the relationship is such that the relationship is defined as me being largely, that's not everything, but largely me being a value to this person, then part of my responsibility is to be, you know, pretty damn patient, you know, and that's what you're describing. That's what you're describing that you did, you know, and God, it's, I mean, you talk about the old days. It's so, God, I mean, I could be so easily offended by somebody not hearing me the way I wanted to be heard, or not understanding my intention, or that kind of stuff. And I mean, it'll shut the whole thing down immediately. And those experiences are just patience, where you say, let's just wait and see what happens, you know? And the other thing is, I don't have to win anything. See, I have a client right now that he just gets offended and he feels like he's always in a battle. I got to win this. It's like, no, you don't. It's okay. Even if you feel like you lose and other people are winning because you're choosing not to fight, you don't lose anything of yourself. You know, you just do what you're doing, do the best. I mean, protect yourself. Don't let somebody hurt you. But other than that, patience is a virtue.
Right. Well, I can't remember. I mean, just how many times, I mean, Alan has told me over and over again, and it's come up again and again in these workshops and these podcasts, is like, what somebody else says and does not define who we are. And somebody can say that to me 1,000 times, but it'll take 1,002 times before I really start to feel that as being a real thing.
Because we got that part of us, man, that wants to be loved and accepted. And we think that they have to have a certain attitude towards us to be okay. See, that's always the hook in it that Bill identified, is the hook is the emotional dependence. And when we start, when we have trouble not not letting their limited opinions define us, right? When we struggle with that, it's because there is some part of us that is still emotionally dependent. And see, that's the important thing here. We don't want to do a spiritual bypass on this stuff. Is that when we react, because we start setting it up like if you react, you're wrong. And no, if you do react, pay attention to it. That's going to teach you something. See, what we want people to do is to have an honest and appropriate relationship to their own reality as well. And if I am reacting, I need to understand that so I can get to the underlying dependence and unhook that. We don't do it intellectually. And that's the other thing that, you know, one of the reasons I think, Tom, you and I have gotten along so well is we both believe that experience really changes us. Right. Experience is so powerful in life. And when you experience something, you experience it both intellectually and emotionally. And that has a lasting impact on us. Is all of the things I remember that were milestones and key experiences in my recovery, formative experiences, were experiences, powerful experiences that were etched on my consciousness.
Why do we have that emotional dependency? Well, it's because we're lacking our own self-esteem, or we're lacking our confidence in ourselves and stuff like that. So part of what we need to realize, I want people to, I hate it when people tell me what I need. Part of what I think is important for me to realize is this, and because this has been, and I think for many of us, you know, I think about everybody we're working with and on the Thursday group and stuff like that. I mean, the massive majority of us, we need so much work on self-compassion. It's like, you know, so that fits into this thing too. Maybe this is taken to another subject, but it's like the idea. So if I am doing my best from an emotional point of view to be of value to you, and the response is such that it doesn't feel good to me because I don't feel like it's getting to where I intended it to be, stuff like that. One more time where it's important that I not turn on myself, you know, but because what you're saying, Alan, is the alternative to turning on ourselves. What can I learn from this? Yeah. Which is, I mean, when you're hurting, when you're beating yourself up doing that stuff, ask yourself that question. What can I learn here? Not what am I supposed to learn? Because that just indicates that there's some massive person out there deciding for you what you're supposed to learn. It's what can I learn? Which means it could be any number of things, and it could be a lot of things. What can I learn from this? There's always shit to learn. There, put that on your bumper sticker.
One last thing, because you brought up Dee Dee a lot on the show, and she sounds pretty emotionally sober. She didn't even have to go to school.
Well, she's done a lot of work. She's done a lot of therapy, a lot of personal work in her life. So no, she comes by it honestly. Yeah.
I love that she's the unofficial fourth. You know, on the show.
Well, she's so often such an, I stopped saying she's the reason I'm sober because that seems still like a codependent way to approach that. But she's certainly in the storyline. There's a story in which she's responsible for my beginning sobriety, but she's certainly a part of my sobriety because of just what partnership is, just that we support of each other and which includes challenging each other, you know, and she's really good at respectfully challenging.
Tend your life, tend your myth. Cultivate your narrative with whomever you are.